What's up, Josh?
What's up, guys? What's going on?
Just enjoying this beautiful sunshine, man. It's been raining over here for a little while, and the sun is back out here in the valley. I know you're in Texas right now, right?
Yeah. And for listeners out there, if this sounds different, first off, welcome to the Anglers Happy Hour podcast, as we always say. But if this sounds different, it's because I'm sitting on my cell phone on a little pond in a ranch in Texas, in the middle of a tournament, and the guys are at Nick's new house in front of his laptop. So we don't have our normal, high budget, high dollar professional studio here.
We had to pare it back a few notches.
We're sitting here looking at a photo of Nick and his son William. They're holding about an 8-pound bass, and William's got a matchbox car in his hand. It's awesome, dude. And his tongue's sticking out. And
what's the story on that fish, Nick?
That's awesome. That's a toad, dude.
Two huge channels of boogers running down his nose. Dude, that was such a fun day. He's a lot younger there. He's not three in that picture. He's probably two, and my daughter was four. And
great photo, dude.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Rob. It was on the spawn, and I had found the male and was messing with him, and then all of a sudden I saw her swim off, and I was like, oh, that fish is definitely worth pursuing. And so it took probably 15 or 20 minutes, catch the male, had my daughter reel it in, and by the time that the female was starting to get ready to bite, he was 2 years old, so his attention span was like negative 5 minutes, and he just started having a catastrophic meltdown. The video of that, my wife took a great video of it. Dude, he like fell down in the live well, and he's just like sobbing and crying. And you're locked in. You got to catch that fish.
So you're like, dude, I got an 8-pounder on a bed. Can you wait a little bit?
Just cry. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it'll be all worth it here in a minute. So the picture is his boogers running down his face from the meltdown holding the fish.
We need to post that on our Instagram. It's
yeah,
a great
we will.
Photo, dude. So.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I think, and this is on me, but there's been a few times where we said we were going to post up to Instagram, we just straight up didn't. So we're going to try to do a better job of that moving forward.
Yeah, well, this is all learning experience. Now, this is like episode 21 and 22, so all of our listeners and buddies out there, it seems like they've been patient with us. We appreciate that, and
yeah,
we will
thank
improve.
You very much.
We definitely will.
So what's going on with you guys? I know Nick, you're in the new place. How do you like it so far, man?
Yeah, man, it's good. We were kind of joking. The gate out front gave Rob some issues today, so I like having the ability to select who gets to join me in this palatial estate that we're living in.
Yeah, they tried to keep me out.
So
that's pretty common. Happens elsewhere.
Yeah, Rob probably needs to shave a little bit, and then maybe
I was gonna say it's the beard, dude. There's no way they thought he was
like he has a nice truck, but I don't know. It looks kind of stolen.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, everything else has been good. I had a funny thing happen to me. My wife and I were able to sneak away to go see the Impractical Jokers movie last weekend, and it was a dud. I loved the show, but the movie was as horrible as you would imagine it was.
So they have a movie?
Oh yeah, dude, it's in like major like big screen theaters.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah,
and it's just like. Their best, maybe a best of, or they took some of their better pranks and just made it into a movie.
So see, they should have done that, dude, because you can tell that these, have you seen it, Rob?
No, I can only imagine how.
So you can tell that these guys really shine with like off the cuff, organic things happening to them. And so in this movie, they tried to write up a storyline and like follow it along. And like, as the story progresses, so they're starting in New York and they're going on a road trip to Miami. And they're doing challenges throughout it. And it was a dud. I just love those guys so much that I didn't care. Like, the parts that were funny were still funny.
Yeah.
But, it was...
And they've kind of jumped the shark, dude.
Yeah.
There's a little bit, at least, right?
I think so, man. It was like 21% on Rotten Tomatoes. And that was like maybe a generous 20% on top of what maybe should have been 1%. But so, what was cool is that, like, the auditorium was filled with people of all ages, man. From, like the youngest person was probably 8 years old to like grandparents were in there, and we're all laughing and having a good time. So the movie ends, and the wild stampede to the bathroom because everyone's been holding it for 2 hours. And so I walk up there and I see a guy with a shirt on, and it was a big kid, but you could tell he's like a high school student. It said WFHS Fishing Club. So I was like, well, clearly he goes to Williamsfield High School here, and he's in the fishing club. So I was like, perfect. Like, I'm gonna chat this guy up and do a shameless plug for the podcast, try and look cool for the youth. Try and look cool for the youth and be like, you know, check me out. I might be old and own a minivan, but I'm still hip and you should respect that. So apparently there's some bathroom etiquette where you don't engage in a conversation over one of the divider panels at a urinal.
Dude, especially with a kid.
But dude, he was like 17. He was like 17 and three quarters. So don't get excited. He was definitely a senior. But it was so funny, man. I said something like, oh man, cool shirt. Like, you got a fishing club at your school? And he didn't know what to do, man. Like, eyes forward, like one word answers. And so I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I'm really into fishing too. Where do you go? And he's just like, golf course ponds and urban lakes around here. And so then I was like, man, I'm going down in flames here. Like, I got to recover. And so he finishes because he's young and it takes young people like 2 seconds to go to the bathroom. And I'm like trying to meet him at the sink. Dude, I got to the sink as he was finishing washing his hands. He was gone. He wanted like nothing. He's like, that guy is going to get me. He's going to get me in the back of his van and haul me away like candy and puppies. He was not feeling it. So I was unable to spread the English happy hour joy to a high school student. So I think we remain uncool in that crowd. But it was so funny. My wife looked at me like, are you kidding me? Like, dude, you're gonna get arrested. And it's like, I wasn't doing, like, obviously I just wanted to talk. But note to anyone as dumb as me, don't start conversations over the divider panel at a urinal.
Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb.
I guess I'm with you, dude. I don't know about that one. Did you go into next, like, one over, like were there a bunch of open ones and you just went right next to them?
There was no, they were all open and he went right next to them.
That's what I'm thinking. It sounds like
fuck. I mean, everything was going good until I tried to put my hand on his shoulder and then he lost it. Totally kidding. That did not happen. But maybe now as I'm explaining this, what's even more disturbing is that I discovered where they auction off, like, government and fleet vehicles when they retire them. And so I've had my eye out for a passenger van for a long time, and I scooped up a sweet ex-Highway Patrol 13 passenger van for like...
Don't tell me you got that.
Oh, he got it.
Oh, dude, I was the winning bidder on that thing.
I actually showed my wife where he screenshotted the winning bid and that he won it.
Yeah.
She goes, oh, Nick, and just shakes her head. And like, it was like in disgust almost. It was hilarious,
Everyone in my immediate circle is like, oh... just so bad.
You stole it though.
Yeah,
you literally stole it.
For a song, dude, it's got 80,000 miles on it. I paid a hair over $3,000 for it.
Not bad.
And I've got a small tribe nowadays that I'm hauling around. My dad lives with us. My sister's coming to visit. So it'll be cool. But it's just funny. It's like apparently talking to high school kids in bathrooms and driving white vans is
panel vans,
not a good recipe to lay low. I think the 5-0 will probably start following me here shortly.
Yeah, but we need to change this.
Your security guard is not going to let you in there.
No kidding, right? He'd be like, there's old Chester in his van.
So Josh, are you guys getting any scare of the corona? Are they talking about canceling the tournament or any of that shenanigans?
Yeah, what's going
there?
On with that?
Man, I hope they don't. You know, I know, we were talking, Rob, we were almost not going to be able to get together and have this podcast because Boyd was going to play baseball tonight, and I know they canceled that.
They officially canceled the season this morning.
No way.
Yeah,
dude.
It's tragic. Yeah,
that is unbelievable. Yep, well, so, I mean, and not to get too far into that, but I'm glad Boyd posted some sick numbers for the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and it's a shame. He's hopefully he's played his last baseball game or college baseball game. I say that hopefully because hopefully he gets drafted, but other than that, I mean, he would have 2 years of eligibility left because they're going to give him
an extra year.
They're going to give an extra year now. So, but it's just messy. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of,
a lot of
unknowns. So it's sad, but
It's probably easier to just, I get that situation. Just get it out there and everyone knows what's going on and knows what to expect rather than waiting in limbo. But
it's a little, quick reaction. I mean, when the College World Series is in June and they're canceling it, it's kind of a bummer. But enough of that.
It's just started.
Yeah, it's just crazy times, though. I mean, I guess I understand part of the panic. I mean, the stuff's probably for real, and we'll find out in a couple of weeks probably. But it's so crazy, dude. I stopped at Sportsman's Warehouse on my way down to Knicks. I've got a guide trip I'm doing tomorrow. and I had to pick up a few little items, and I walked, dude, the parking lot was packed, right? And I walk in there, and there's a line across the building for the gun shelf, for the counters, what I mean.
People so, buying ammo and
yeah,
stuff.
So I guess, I mean, I asked the lady at the counter, I'm like, have you been this busy all day? And she goes, yeah, we're having a sale on guns. And I said, well, I guess at least the people that didn't get toilet paper are getting guns.
And that's how they'll get their
toilet paper. That's how they get their toilet paper, right?
Yes, sir. So, you shouldn't have much trouble getting toilet paper.
She kind of chuckled and was like, okay, yeah, I guess you're right. But pretty nuts, man. Like, the lines, it was just crazy busy in there. And that's, I guess people don't have anything else to do, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure some of them are off work, and hey,
well, everybody's
I mean,
out of school.
Case,
all the schools are canceled.
Sale, yeah. But I'm sure that's not their main reason for going in. But that's crazy.
Yeah, dude. Odd times.
I don't know where I'm at. I'm in like a very rural Texas. You know, I'm here in Lake Fork, and I'm in like East Texas, a couple hours east of Dallas. And I mean, it's not the middle of nowhere, but it's super rural.
Right.
And,
probably in a good spot then. Yep.
What's that?
You're probably in a good spot. You know, you're not around a lot of people that have traveled around the world, are you?
Yeah. Other than last week, I shook about 10,000 hands and took 10,000 pictures with people. But if I survive that, it should be good to go, dude. This week, yeah, I mean, where we're at, and you know, I hope they don't cancel. I really hope they don't cancel anything on our end. I mean, we're able to keep doing what we're doing. They made an announcement at Major League Fishing that we have a lot of like fan interaction events where we'll go into a Bass Pro Shops or meet up at a restaurant and have people come in and hang out, and they canceled all that.
That makes sense.
But, yeah, and that's fine. It's a bummer, but dude, I mean, there's nothing to watch, and man, what a great opportunity to gain some new fans if we're one of the few sports that's able to keep going through this. I mean, we can all get in our trucks and drive to where we're going, and we can make it work, hopefully. I mean, I don't, like you said earlier, who knows what it's going to turn into, but I mean, I think we can keep making it work. We all want to keep fishing and working, and like, you know, I mean, hey, maybe we'll make some new fans while there's some other sports that aren't playing.
Valid point. That's a great point. That could definitely happen, especially when you guys are on live and people can actually watch it right now, so that's cool.
Yeah, think about the people that aren't at work that you know, maybe wouldn't have the opportunity to normally watch. Hopefully we're able to do it. We'll see. I know Bass had already canceled their next couple events, and I don't know. I mean, we're in the middle of fishing this one, so obviously we're going to keep fishing it, but I really hope to be in my truck in a few weeks driving across the country again.
Yeah, are you driving home this time then?
Yeah, I'm going to for that, you know, and for that reason, again, like I'm sitting here, Brett Hyatt, I'm watching Brett in this little pond where I'm sitting on like a dock on the pond, this little private pond, and Brett's in his boat slinging around a chatterbait.
Is he catching anything?
He's caught, he put his boat in the water about an hour and a half ago, and he's caught seven. I watched him catch one of them. I haven't seen the other six, so he knows about that.
tell us about the drone that tried to attack you.
Yeah, he's playing around with his drone. This is the second time he's flown it over. He's staying in the cabin about 500 yards from the cabin I'm in, and he's flown this drone over twice now, and this time he tried to do a little flyby. It scared me. I was ducking down because I don't know. I don't think he's got a lot of practice driving a drone.
Too bad you don't have a shotgun.
Fix that real fast.
He's got to be new to it. It's a cool little drone, but where was I going with that? He was like, he could believe I was gonna drive home, but I told him, I was like, man, I don't know. I just would rather drive right now. Not that I'm scared to fly, but if some weird stuff happens with travel vans or whatever, I'd like to be at least with my truck and boat so I can go fishing at home. Oh, I don't want it to be across the country.
Right.
No kidding.
Yeah. So on another note of crazy stuff, I mean, we've had an unbelievable amount of water in Arizona. And I believe Roosevelt in the last 48 hours has come up almost 5 feet, Josh.
Wow.
That's crazy. That's a lot of water.
Dude, that lake's 25 miles long. And it's,
probably hasn't happened in 10 years, right?
That hasn't happened. I can't remember.
Lifetimes?
Well, we've had water like that, but I mean, it's definitely, it's like once in a 10 or 15 year deal. So, pretty interesting.
I was driving home from visiting my brother in Flagstaff yesterday, and the amount of snow that was coming down in Flagstaff. The drive from Phoenix to Flagstaff, you know, is normally like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and you drop tons of elevation. You go from like 7,200 down to 1,200. We rolled up on three absolutely fresh rollover accidents. Like, it was harrowing, man. Like, there was one in the snow and then two in the rain. And we were having those types of rains where, like, the highway had an inch, you know, a bunch of standing water, and it's a two-lane divided highway, and people drive so aggressively, and two people had rolled off of in the wet part. So, I mean, that was an incredible storm, and they're calling for a substantial amount more in a couple days, Wednesday, Thursday next week. So, man, we're getting it in the desert this year.
That's good. That's freaky when you have your kids in the car, man. But, man, what is going on with this world? It's raining in Arizona 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row. That's funny.
Dude, that's when you live in the desert, you, like, celebrate. Right. We got an inch of rain.
We have all these guide clients out here that try to escape the rain and the cold weather back east and up north. And
they end up bringing it with them.
Well, and then they come out here and go fishing with us, and it's rainy and stormy, and, like, they're like, where's the sun?
Yeah.
And we're all excited because we love the clouds. It's like,
dude, our listeners that aren't from, the Southwest are like, yeah, these guys, why are they so excited? But that's a rare deal. It's rare to have a winter as wet as we've had. And
we'll
go 6 months without seeing a drop of rain. So we take it when we can get it. What happens, like, you know, so let's just say Roosevelt fills to 100%. Every, you know, drought year that you have, which is more common than not, you might lose 15 or 20 feet of elevation in the lake. So this is going to get us through the next 5 years of Roosevelt, you know, being high. I mean, even if we have drought years for the next 4 years, I mean, you guys agree that
totally
we're going to have high water for not just this year, but at least a couple years, which is great.
It's great, man. And, you know, what a perfect storm of good things. Because they've got Florida strain largemouth in there now that are a couple years of getting established, right? The lake was learning some new biomass and biodiversity with the gizzard shad in there, and it was kind of resettling from that. So it's the future is bright for the Salt River chain, at least Roosevelt.
For Roosevelt, for sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe we'll even – this is really wishful thinking, but maybe we'll get some excess and flush out all of our other lakes, which they need that without going too much into that one.
That would be that'd be fantastic if that happened.
Yeah. This is also a paid advertisement for the other people who are not in the Southwest to come out and hire Rob to guide them fishing. This is paid for by the Apache Junction Tourism Committee.
Apache Junction.
That was their whole budget.
That was, yeah. They paid us
$7. That's funny. Well, that's cool. As I'm watching Brett go by and fish, he's got some tunes cranking in the boat.
What does that guy listen to? Freaking
country.
Oh, I was gonna say Nickelback. Yeah. He struck me as maybe like some soft, like one of those gangster types listening to some Nickelback.
I think he listens to very similar stuff that you listen to, Nick.
Oh, he's got a little country in him, huh?
A lot of country in him. I've been fishing with him enough and hunting with him enough to. He's got the little morning ritual of some music going on. Okay. So.
What's life without music, man?
Yeah.
Rob's not into music. Josh, I know you are, man. What do you crank? Let's say it's the morning of the tournament and you're heading to the lake, you're trying to find your edge. Are you a music guy?
It's funny, you know, I've changed over the years up to this point. Now that I'm an old man, not as much as I used to be. So when I'm a really old man like Rob, I'm cool now, just like
you just drive in silence, wondering like what you're gonna have for lunch.
No, what you're gonna have for dinner at 3:30. Yeah.
Dude, if you go back 10 years, I had Metallica cranking in the truck, you know, on the way to the ramp, trying to get hyped up. And now it's like, I listen to a podcast, you know, listen to different podcasts. And, and we're going to talking tournaments again and on this. And it's different maybe going fun fishing or whatever. But I think so much throughout the course of the week about the tournament and what I'm going to do and this and that. And, like, those 15 or 20 or 30 minutes on the way to the lake that morning is my last chance to kind of settle down and maybe not go nuts thinking about the tournament. So I really enjoy, that 15 minutes back and forth both ways throughout the course of a tournament week without Just like listening to the podcast, listening to a podcast, and listening to something totally unrelated. But if it is That's music, cool. it's a mix, man. I mean, it's country, it's a little rock, and then when I'm fishing too, I'll listen to a little bit. Or especially, you know, if I'm by myself practicing all day long, you know, you get to like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's slow day or whatever. It's nice to be able to do that, and usually it's country. I'm always afraid if I turn on something a little too pace that I'm gonna fish too fast. Yeah. Can you guys see that happening?
Turn on some techno, and all of a sudden you're on trolling motors on like kill mode, and you're just burning bank.
They I don't know. That's just kind of how I feel. But Nick and I, we used to fish and listen to all kinds of, high paced stuff, didn't we, dude?
Oh yeah, man, that was.
What's your jam?
Oh man, I'm pretty diverse. I've Rob hinted at it. I've really fallen into the outlaw country genre recently, so much to the detriment of my family, who has to listen to Chris Stapleton and Sturgill Simpson at all hours of the day. That right now is like my guiding light, man. I get down on some of that, and I don't know, I think it blends well. There's some like ideology in outlaw country that blends into the outdoor world pretty seamlessly, and I don't know, I think that's my jam right now.
I'm with you. Dude, I love it too. You've got me, so I was a Stapleton. You've got me hooked on Sturgill, and dude, I like his latest
it's good
album,
right?
Way better than his first. It's totally different, but I think it's awesome, dude.
Well, Sturgill's one of his early albums, it's the one where he has the album cover where he looks like he's from like the Civil War or something. That mustache that he's sporting was the inspiration for Nick's pelt.
What happened to the pelt, by the way? The pelt is gone.
Oh,
Josh.
No, don't tell me it's gone.
The pelt got pelted. It, you know, man, maybe I'm just better off being bald on the face. I'm already getting bald on the head. I think bald on the face is going to have to be the case. Dude, let's do the math. Talking to underage minors in bathrooms, driving a white van, and a mustache, like, you might as well just lock me up now. Like, it is over. Like, that is, I gotta
three strikes,
take one.
You're out.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get it back to two strikes.
Classic.
That's hilarious. Well, that's cool. And to bring it back to fishing a little bit, you know, talking to my wife and Brett running around. I've spent, you know, a couple days just poking around, testing baits and stuff. You know, you get off the water early or before our practice started. You know, I've utilized this pond a little bit and also just come down to try to have some fun and catch a couple fish. And it's got some fish in it. It's about, maybe 3 to 5 acres, something like that. Tons of grass, tons of hydrilla. Really clear water, and it's because of the hydrilla. The hydrilla just filters it out. It doesn't seem to have a bunch of big ones. They're on beds right now, and so when they're on beds, you can see what lives in a pond. And I think we're seeing it here. It's a bunch of 2-pounders and or some random 3 to 5 pound females. But it's a cool little spot. And I know Nick, you had you kind of grew up fishing ponds around Phoenix and stuff. But Rob, did you ever pond fish much?
Not a ton. We used to fish some golf courses a little bit, but you know, just I'm more. You know what? I did a little bit in town, some of the urban lakes when I was younger, but not a ton. So,
well, growing up, and you were born in Minnesota, right?
Minnesota, yep.
And that's
yep.
pond country, isn't it?
Yeah, they're all lakes there. It's a land of 10,000 lakes, so they might be the size of a pond, but it's considered a lake. I mean, there's. I'm kidding, but I mean, most of the lakes are pretty small, but yeah, it was mostly lakes there.
What about you, Josh?
Is access to those ponds, do you need a watercraft? Because I can picture a lot of those ponds up there being like lined with cattails and swampy type bank.
So we would fish, when I was a kid, our parents would take turns dropping us off, and it was me and like three buddies, and we would always fish right by the little dam. So there'd be like a little concrete dam that goes from the I guess where the outlet was on into the little creek off to the next lake, you know, and we would just always fish there because we could fish the still water above it, or we could fish the moving water, you know, right below the dam. So that was we had pretty good access. But I understand what you're saying. A lot of the lakes in that area, Josh, probably have cattails and reeds or, you know, stuff around them where you really can't get to them. But
gotcha. You need a kayak or something like that, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. But
was that predominantly smallmouth or what?
No, we didn't even catch bass. We'd catch occasionally catch a walleye, but mostly northern pike, perch, yellow perch. And when they wouldn't bite, we'd get bored and snag carp and catch little bullheads, you know, that kind of stuff. So just
that's cool.
Yeah, it didn't matter. Whatever bit we would throw.
That's how you start, right? Like yeah. Anything that you can catch is the quarry, and you're going for it.
Yeah, yeah. But it was pretty cool. There was a guy that owned the hardware store, and he had a little tackle shop in town, and he would always kind of give me tips on what to do. And we'd always, every spring, there would be these pike that would come up that stream or creek, whatever it was, and he would catch them on a white marabou jig on a spinner rod. And they weren't giant, but it was just fun to do, and he'd always dial me in on that. It was a lot of fun.
That's a good sport. Yeah.
But it just, I mean, I guess at that point, I mean, that guy was in really into the fishing, and he would do different techniques at different times of the year, and I guess you start learning that stuff when you're younger. And otherwise, I mean, when you first start fishing, you just go fishing, right?
Yeah.
There's no rhyme or reason to it, you know?
Yeah, just get it wet.
Right. So that was kind of cool that he taught me that type of stuff. But, yeah, I got a funny story about Boyd. He's my son before the season was canceled. I mean, he would squeeze in a little fishing session about, you know, an hour here and an hour there on some of the local ponds. And so now he's obviously got a lot more time, but he was down at this little area where he's fishing, and this guy shows up, and I think Boyd carries one or two rods around, right, in a pocket full of lizards or pocket
pocket full of crawdads,
yeah, but just pretty simple, right? A couple worms, couple weights, whatever you can steal off the deck of my boat. And anyhow, this dude shows up, and he's got like, Boyd said he was probably 5 or 8 years older than him, so middle 20s, somewhere like that. Guy's got like 8 rods
for a pond.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow,
yeah.
Dude.
And he walks up to Boyd, and he's like, "Hey, man, how you doing?" And Boyd's like, "Oh, I'm doing good. How you doing?" And just kind of cordial, right?
Uh-huh.
The guy goes, "Yeah, I've caught an 8-pounder out of here."
Oh,
I had to tell him right away.
He goes, "I've caught countless 5-pounders out of here."
Hey, Josh, when they see it, they know, right?
Yeah. So Boyd's throwing a Zoom lizard, right? Probably one that he stole out of my bow. Just simple, whatever. And the guy goes, "What are you throwing?" He goes, Boyd goes, "A lizard."
A used lizard.
The guy goes, "Oh, I remember when I used to throw those."
He's one-upping him.
Totally just, Boyd's like, "Okay, whatever, buddy." Just kind of goes, but I just thought it was hilarious.
That's going to be one of our new taglines, or maybe the next t-shirt. I remember when I used to throw those.
Yeah, well, and I remember when I used to throw big game mono.
That's funny, dude.
So
yeah,
again, dude, today when I'm at Sportsman's Warehouse, I get a what are we doing right now? FaceTime from Boyd. Sorry, I had a brain fart there, but I get a FaceTime from Boyd, and he goes, "I thought I hooked into that dude's 10-pounder or 8-pounder or whatever it was, and he's got a carp on. Ate his Cinco."
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so anyhow, he's having a blast, so enough of that.
That's cool he's doing that. Yeah, what a poor ambassador for the sport to that guy. At least props to him for getting out and fishing, but that's pretty funny, dude.
And it's funny, those, you know, sadly, that population just exists in all rungs of the fishing ladder, from the highest to most expensive end of it to like the most humble lowest end of it. Yep. They're just, you know, insecurity.
Dude is trying to be Hank Patterson.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
So
it's too bad he didn't encounter old Fat Cat on that pond, because he probably would have got a high kick or a bobby out of that.
Yes,
one.
He would.
That might have went badly for him.
Man. Dude, I got big leagued over at Mansell Oasis Park. I was with my kids last year, and we didn't have any fishing rods. We're just, you know, walking over to the playground, and, you know, there's a guy that's catching some catfish, and I can't even remember what I said to him. He was reeling one in or something, and I was just, like, walking by. I was like, "Hey, man, nice job. Looks like you're wearing them out." And, you know, he looked at me, and, like, basically, like, he said something, like, blatantly obvious, like, "No, I'm not," you know, just like
squashed.
"I don't want you to see what I'm doing. Like, keep moving. I don't want you coming over here and catching
nothing
my
to see
fish.
Here."
That's not exactly what he said. You've said something. I was like, "Okay, I'm just gonna keep walking."
That's so funny.
All right,
dude.
Sir, there's a 17 10-inch channel catfish left in this urban pond. Pretty sure, no matter what, in the next 2 hours, there will be none left. So enjoy.
Yeah, it's just a lesson learned. You don't roll up to the pond and start talking 8 and 8-pounders yeah. and multiple 5-pounders.
I think we could probably deduce a formula that as soon as within like the first paragraph, spoken paragraph with somebody when you meet them, if they throw a weight out there, there's probably a formula where you divide it by 3 and then halve it again and add 4 ounces, and that's how big it was. So it's like if you had a 9-pounder, you go down to 3 pounds, halve it again, 1.5 pounds, probably like a 1.9, right? Like you can instantly size that up.
The positive thing though is 9 out of 10 guys you run into in a situation like that are totally cool.
Are so, super cool.
And not that the guy wasn't cool, but it just was.
No doubt.
It was a
no doubt.
One of those deals.
But what would life be if we didn't have a little fun and poke fun at people who take it so serious, yeah. man? Like, chill out. It's all good.
It's more fun to talk about the 1 out of 10 you for bet. Sure.
Yeah. Well, once your tournament's over at Lake Fork, I'm going to ask you what you were throwing and. I'll say, yeah, I remember when I used to throw those.
Perfect. Yeah, right. That's cool. Okay, well, before we leave pond fishing real quick, let's just – and we're not going to sit here and talk pond fishing all episode, but what's interesting is, these fish are all over beds, and you can tell they've been spawning in this pond for a while, and they're just hitting the beds on the bigger lakes. And it's an interesting lesson, like – you know, we're 15 minutes right here from the lake, 5 miles from the lake I'm fishing, Lake Fork, and the fish are in a totally different phase, and it's just because this pond is so much shallower and smaller, it warms up a lot faster, and you see it in Phoenix, too, like, the fish hit beds in February on the ponds, and then they hit beds on the lakes in March and April, and, kind of around the country, it's a similar deal. They've been spawning down in Florida since December. And they won't hit the beds in maybe New York, Wisconsin until late May and into June. Kind of wild how and, it's different everywhere.
And that lesson can also be used on a big lake like Roosevelt earlier in the week. There's not fish spawning everywhere, but there's fish spawning in real small, real shallow, isolated areas. And obviously that was before this big storm we had, but I mean, water in different parts of a lake will warm up way quicker than other parts of the lake, you know? So that's...
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
That's a super point, dude.
It's like a pond within a lake.
It's important to pay attention to your water temp, dude.
Right.
Really important.
Right. So it's... But, I mean, another thing here, I mean, if you look at Havasu is a big, shallow lake, and those fish spawn there way quicker than they spawn in our lakes here in central Arizona because they're deeper and...
It's the shallow water, you think, huh? You don't think
I think it's interesting.
It's a good point.
I think it's the overall lake is shallower, so it just warms up quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that I think the average depth is quite a bit less, but...
Right on. And I know a lot of the listeners know this, but in my opinion, the magic number, and this is not just my opinion that I formulated, this is kind of, I think, a pretty popular common theme, but 60 degrees and the first full moon.
Yep.
That's when you get the first big wave. You'll definitely get a few stragglers or early birds before that. You know, if one of the other hits, it might be 58 and have a full moon. You can get a couple early goers and vice versa. You know, no full moon, but 60 degrees, a few will pop up. But you get a big wave at the 60 degrees and full moon, and that's what we're hitting this week. It's really interesting here on Fork because it's the same thing. You've got clear water and dirty water, and obviously you've got an upper lake and a lower lake. So the dirty water warms faster. So I've seen 70 degrees on the upper ends of the lake and the way back in the creeks and dirty water, but it's still 55 on the lower end. So the fish are in totally different phases depending on what part of the lake you're at, and it's fishing totally differently. Like the springtime's a tricky time. Because, like, when you're rigging up to go fish a new lake or a lake that you haven't been to for a while, you could literally rig up for, like, 3 different seasonal patterns.
Like, pre-actual spawn and post-spawn?
Yeah. And, I got – when I showed up here, I got 8 rods, pre-spawn rods with swim baits, jerk baits, football jigs, Carolina rigs, crank baits. And then I got my spawning stuff, a few sight fishing rods. I got – all just the typical flipping stuff, weightless stick baits, that type of stuff, and then some post-spawn stuff. I got a frog tied on, a buzz bait, and it seems like I've kind of gravitated. So I fished a little bit of everything. I wanted to see, what phase would would I be able to just do the best on, right? Like, I kind of started on the lower end. When practice started, we had kind of a cool night, a rainy night. And I was like, well, it's going to take a while for those fish on the upper end to really get moving this afternoon. They want that water to warm up. So I'm going to start on the lower end where the water's already cold and in the 50s and try to catch the pre-spawner. And I kind of struck out. So it warmed up. I got back into some creeks later and had a lot more action. And that's the direction I went. But yeah, if you're, you know, just like to Rob's point, if you're showing up to a new body of water like that, you know, it maybe if you fish for 3 or 4 hours and you're struggling, don't give it 30 minutes. But if you're struggling in 3 to 4 hours, you can move to a different part of the lake and
look for a different, you know,
get in a totally different mindset for the fish, right?
Yeah,
definitely. Hey, Josh, I just had an interesting. Boyd was trying to FaceTime me, and I told him to text me some photos. And He didn't text me photos, but he texts back and says there's fry everywhere. So this is in a pond in the valley, and there's full-blown post-spawn to where there's fry already.
It's hilarious.
It is.
And it happens quick, right?
It does, yes. Yep. Pretty crazy. So, I mean, there's fish everywhere in our lakes that haven't even thought about spawning, and those fish are all done. So... crazy, huh?
That's interesting. It's interesting. So yeah, if you read on the internet, you go on and read a fishing report, and it says they're just moving up to spawn or something on one lake. Don't be so sure. That's the only deal going on, and
right.
Especially if you're fishing a lake down the street, could be a totally different deal. But
bring something other than a pack of white lizards.
Yeah, I remember when I was younger, the old school guys used to say when the Palo Verde trees would bloom, the bass are spawning. Well, I learned that when the Palo Verde trees are blooming, they've been spawning for about a month and a half.
Yeah, throw topwater because they're fry garden.
Right.
Hey, that's very interesting. I don't even know what a Palo Verde tree is. I live in Arizona. How sad is that?
The yellow flowers. The yellow flowers, Josh, on the trees, on the green trees. dude. That's funny.
He's from New Hampshire.
Good point.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not a true Arizona. I had one funny story about bed fishing I wanted to tell you guys before you go past that. Today is my off day. So I fished the first day of the tournament yesterday in Group A, and Group B's on the water today. So I'll be on out the next day. But today I went to another local lake to do a couple videos with a guy named Tyler Brink. He does a lot of writing for Major League Fishing and Western Bass and stuff. And
hold on, dude. Who did you go with? It kind of skipped on us. Who'd you go with?
Oh, Tyler Brink.
Oh, okay,
so,
cool.
he, really cool guy. He's from Washington. He does a lot of writing for Major League Fishing and Western Bass. But Tyler's a big fisherman himself. So we are out on the boat, and we're trying to get stuff done. I had some work to do to the boat this afternoon. I had to rig a lot of tackle, so we're trying to knock everything out as quickly as possible. And we do an article on bed fishing. And we just go up to the bank to try to find one to get a photo, you know, maybe catch one and take a photo of it. And sure enough, there's a pair of fish. There's like a 4 to 5 pound female and a 2 pound male.
Perfect.
And the female is like hanging out about 6 feet off the bed, and the male's smack dab in the middle of the bed, which is pretty common. But I flip up there, and the female doesn't pay much attention, but the male's already very interested in the bait. And I make like 2 flips, and now the male's grabbing it. But the female has come in now. And is also showing interest, but the male's getting it too quick. So I'm going to tell this story, and then I want a couple opinions on fish behavior on beds. But the male, I shake the male off like 3 or 4 times, and I'm like, dang, man, I personally feel like I want the female to get it. If you take the male off the bed, you got a 50-50 chance of that female going down the bed and guarding or swimming off and absolutely being gone. So I like to try to catch the female first. I shake this male off 3 or 4 times, and finally I'm like, screw it, we gotta go. I just want to get this picture and get out of here. I just catch the male, and I'm like, well, I'll throw it in the live well for a quick second and see if the female swims up and gets on the bed. You know, that works sometimes too. Well, it doesn't really work. The female swims up onto the bed, but she's not biting right away. And again, I don't really have the time. I've got to get out of there and do a bunch of stuff before tomorrow. So we drive off, and we drive like a half mile. And I realize, oh, you know, the fish isn't alive well.
Fish killer.
The male's still in the live well. So this is bad of me, dude. I probably should have gone right back to the bed and released it right where it was, but I knew the female was still on the bed. So I'm like, it'll be okay. You know, I had a broken part on my boat, and I was really just wanted to get out of there. So I put the fish in the water, and I'm like, it'll swim back to the bed eventually. I don't know how long it'll take, but the female's there. Everything's going to be fine. And so we get off the water, and Tyler's like, oh, man, I forgot I got my travel rod with me. I'm staying on this lake. Can you give me a couple of those baits, and I'm going to go see if I can't catch that fish. So as I drive out of there, and like less than an hour later, I get a text from Tyler.
Don't tell me the male.
He caught the female, and it's a 5-pounder.
Okay.
And he goes, dude, the male was back already.
Insane, dude. I wondered if that's where you were going.
He was just as pissed off, and he had to shake him off like 3 or 4 times before he caught the female.
Dude.
That's impressive.
That is the number one dad right there. That is a dedicated father. Makes all the dads wearing jorts and driving minivans look like nothing. Like, if you're willing to go back for that, like, you win. That's top of the rung.
That's the Nick of fish dads right there.
No kidding.
Yeah, for sure.
Dude, how far away did you take that fish on your boat before you let him go?
Like a half mile. So, it's not that far, but just the fact that it knew directionally how to get right back, and he swam right back there, is incredible.
Was the fish breathing hard at least?
Yeah, no kidding. He's like wobbling.
Dude, pissed off.
He's all sweaty.
He's in his first flip in there, the male's trying to eat.
Wow. Rob said he's sweating. All sweaty from his jaw. Dude, that's a story that is interesting, because I've wondered that, and that just goes to show that somehow they must have a Garmin unit built in, and they're just like, yep, follow the arrow. I know where my trail was. I'm good.
That's exactly. What do you think that is, Rob? I mean, you do a lot of hunting and stuff. What in their instincts do you think guides them back to that bed?
I have no idea, but I just had a vision of after a tournament where you bring the fish to weigh in, all these bass swimming back to the bed.
Dude, like in a straight line.
I'm sorry to bore you guys with stories, because I want to hear your opinions on bed fishing, but I've got one more, and this is a wild one. At Roosevelt Lake 6-7 years ago, I'm fishing a tournament with my buddy Tommy, and he finds like a 5-plus pounder smallmouth on a bed and in practice. And in the tournament, we go over there, and it's right next to like a hardwood stump, which there are not very many hardwood stumps on Roosevelt, right?
Yeah.
It's the lake's full of other types of trees, like I'm an idiot with bushes and trees that I just mentioned, but like mesquite trees and stuff like that, right, Rob?
Salt cedars, mesquite.
Salt cedars, yeah. That's it, what it is, yep. But there's like a hardwood stump that this fish is spawning on in the clear water, and we fish for it for a while. It's not easy to catch like a typical smallmouth, and he finally catches it, and it's a toad. And we weigh it in at Windy Hill. And we tell Dave, my buddy Dave Stokowski, and his partner Greg, we tell him about this fish we caught. And don't tell him where we caught it, but we tell him we caught it. And they see us weighed in and stuff, and they see the picture of it. And the next weekend, they go out. This is a week later, but they go out the next weekend and caught a 5-2 off the same bed.
What?
So I don't know how to explain it. Like, it's a week later. So first off, it's really interesting if it was the same fish that it stayed on a bed for a week. But it's also amazing if it swam 5 miles back.
And yeah, that's amazing.
Dude, he must have got stage fright. Tommy caught it like right as it was ready to do its thing, and then he like clenched it back in, or she did, and then it was like a week later she had found her mode, and they got clenched again. That I don't even know. And you know, for people again that don't know Roosevelt. That's not a huge smallmouth fishery, right? So it's not like that lake is just chock full of 5-pound smallmouth that would just move up.
Yeah, the odds of 5-2s coming off the same bed are slim. If you guys had to guess what happened, what's your guess?
Dude, I think it's the same fish. Yeah, totally.
Had to.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. But fish migrate a lot. You know, they move a long ways.
And you wonder.
It's like, you know, our lakes, the water goes down, and I mean, it's miles from. Like when the lakes come up 50 feet, I mean, there's miles from where there was fish to where the water is.
The new lake effect.
The new lake, right. Mm-hmm. I know I'm having a hard time explaining that, but What I mean
is,
this
point, though.
All of a sudden the water comes up and there's fish in the back of the river where there was no water for years, right?
Yeah.
And it, I mean,
they just
move
right there.
They just show up. Yeah, it's crazy.
And then you wonder too, it's like, you know, I'm sure that as fish get bigger, obviously they get smarter and more adept at surviving and reproducing. They've probably just have, would you think that they just have, they know now that there are areas that are conducive to spawning safely and effectively, and they probably frequent those spots, right? I mean, don't you think there's competition for the best, you know, safest spots to spawn on a lake?
Yeah, and that was an example right there, right? So you're in an area that doesn't have a lot of cover, and there's one big hard stump,
beautiful
to spawn
stump
next to, and guess what? The king of that part of the lake is spawning.
Is gonna get
the queen, the 5-pound smallmouth, you know. Yeah.
Well, and you also look at a lake like Lake Mead, where every tournament goes out of Colville Bay. That's a big bay, right? But they still take the release boat and go out to the mouth of the bay and drop the fish. But if fish didn't migrate from there, Colville Bay would have every bass that Lake Mead has in it. In
That's
Colville
a good
bay.
Point. That's a really good point, dude.
I mean, those fish have to move.
Yeah, on all lakes.
On all lakes, yeah. I mean,
that's a great point.
I mean, those areas are good because there's release fish and there's some that stick around.
So
but there's no way that they all stick around.
It'd be such a great experiment. And I know, like, watching tournaments from, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they used to do that. Supposedly, they put, like, three little trackers on the fish. And it was so random. Like, it was so random what these fish would do after release. Like, one would swim 10 miles, one would swim 500 yards, and one would literally sit on the same stump for 3 days. Do you remember that?
Sounds just like people.
Yeah.
Some people run marathons. Yeah. Some people do half marathons, and some people sit on the couch.
Eat chips on the couch.
Yeah.
Generally, the 5-pounder would sit on the couch.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Armchair.
Yeah. But so when fish are on beds, like if you pull up and you see a big female on the bed and a small male on the bed, are you guys, in the situation I talked about, are you going to just catch the male, or are you going to wait for that female? And do you guys ever live well the male until the female will bite?
Yeah, that's what I used to always do. I want to say you may be one of the people that taught me to, you know, try to just shake it away from the male and you have a better chance at the female, which guiding, you know, hey, a 2-pounder is still a good fish sometimes, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Dude, it's the 5-minute rule. I talked about it today. If you don't catch them in 5 minutes, if it's a 10-pounder, it's different.
It's different, yeah. But I've also seen a lot of situations in tournaments where you'll go down a bank, you'll have a guy in front of you picking off all the males, maybe on purpose, maybe not on purpose, but... And then all of a sudden you're going behind them catching all these pigs, or vice versa.
Work out perfectly. That's funny, dude.
Yeah, stuff like that happens. Or you'll have someone that goes through a cove in the morning, and you happen to go through that cove in the afternoon and whack all the females. You know, I don't know. I know there's a lot better bed fishermen than what I am to talk about it, but I mean.
I will, what you're describing, dude, firsthand, I have experienced that, but I was the one catching the males. And I remember in one of those small little cuts on Saguaro, on the north bank there, I had gone through one of them, and I had a friend of mine's son with me, and we were, you know, we'd caught a buck off of a bed and didn't see a female, and we had gone like 200 feet, and it was like a weekend, so there was hundreds of boats out there. And all of a sudden, we hear a splash, and we turn around, and another boat had already moved in onto that spot, and they caught like a 7.5-pounder. I was like, I am so sorry, dude. I don't know how I didn't see that fish, and I'd like to think that it moved up like Rob's describing. It probably was there the whole time. I was too dumb to see it.
A lot
but
of times, they're
funny.
Just in a little dark spot or a little, yeah.
You
just
miss
them.
But it was classic, like literally like hear a bucket dumping over the side of the water splashing, and like, oh, sweet, well, they owe us one.
But that's where, you know, tournament fishing versus guiding. I mean, tournament fishing, you have the ability to use the bigger swim baits, and I mean, not everyone can swing a swim bait out there. Not everyone's very accurate. So, you know, when I'm dealing with someone that's having trouble getting it on the bed, we're just trying to catch a fish.
Yeah, that's a white drop shot.
Yeah. But you know, I've in a tournament situation, I think a lot of times I would try to catch the female first nowadays.
What about you, Josh? What do you think, man? Are you live welling the male, or are you just going to try and, you know, target the female?
Yeah, and Rob brought the swim bait in. I mean, I'm going to try to catch the female first because I've seen it, you know, it works. I think it's a 50-50 deal. I mean, And that female will probably eventually come back, but you may not have time to wait for a couple hours. You know what I mean? Or however long, 20 minutes.
So don't risk.
But dude, I've seen it. That's my last resort, is to put them in the live well, because so I've sometimes done that and just said, fine, I'm just going to catch the male. And then the female's like, that wasn't right. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
You know?
Deuces.
and you never see her again. So,
but sometimes
they swim right up and bite.
You have a different strategy nowadays, where in MLF you can't live well it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, that's a really good point, dude. So what you need to do there is go to a bigger bait instantly. Go to a bait that that male can't handle. Giant tube or a swim bait.
Yeah.
Something that, and again, I'll do that even whether it's MLF or not, dude, because again, I don't want to risk that male or that female leaving when she sees the male caught. So I'll try to go to a big bait right away, because even if you're trying to shake that male off, sometimes you'll accidentally hook him if it's a small bait, and then you're toast. So every fish is different, and there's no one golden rule, and I'm not the world's best sight fisherman. So, take all that with a grain of salt. But
just remember to our listeners what you paid for all of this advice, and then use that as you try and decipher if it's worth anything. This is a free podcast.
It's hilarious. Well, they got basically what they paid for this podcast is what they got in audio quality too. So we apologize for not having our mics and stuff like that. And eventually, you know, as we move forward with this podcast and keep growing it, the plan is, as I go on these road trips, to bring some equipment and get interviews with my buddies. And if we actually had the equipment, I've got all a bunch of buddies here staying at the same place, but I didn't want to be passing the phone back and forth and making it I think we would have had audio issues with that. But if you listen to the whole podcast, thanks for doing so. And we'll be back in the studio next week, assuming none of us have the virus.
And, yeah, sure, probably not a laughing matter, but
we'll be back. I was going to talk about this tournament before, but I say we just do it next week. We're already about an hour in. What do you guys think? Any last thoughts from you guys?
Can we get an update on Brett? Is he still fishing?
Yeah,
he's off the water. It started dumping rain. I don't know if you guys could hear it earlier.
No.
But throughout our conversation, it's poured and then stopped. And he scrambled off the water.
We have to question his commitment.
Yeah, fair weather, huh?
Yeah.
can't fly the drone
fishing for 2 hours just on an off day. You know what I mean? Like I've done. I love the fishing, and we're in Texas, and you could always catch some toads. But props to him, man. He did like 10 laps around this little pond.
That's awesome.
True, a nap might sound better than that at that point in the tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, sweet, dude. Yeah, I think what you said. Just echoing that, we appreciate everyone that's listened to this episode. Obviously not our finest work, but hopefully there was some nuggets that we were able to share, and we definitely had a good time with it. So.
Yeah, right on. Good luck tomorrow, dude. Go get them.
I need it, guys. Looking forward to seeing you. We'll talk to you next week. And thanks again to the listeners. As we always say, thanks for the ratings, thanks for the reviews, and mostly just thanks for listening. And keep hitting us with all your comments and feedback, pictures, anything like that. If you got any funny pond fishing stories or anything like that, or just any big fish you've caught out of ponds, again, we'll continue to try to post, and we'll talk to y'all next week.
Right on. See you, Josh.
See you guys.